Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
They say silence is never truly silent. Sometimes when the world goes still, that's when the dead lean closest, listening, waiting for the right moment to slip back through the cracks. Ellie never thought of herself as someone who believed in such things. She was practical, sharp, the type who made her bed first thing every morning, like clockwork, before so much as putting the kettle on. A woman of habit, of order. Ghost stories, number. That was for others, and yet. Life and death don't always ask whether you believe before they make themselves known. Ellie is my partner's aunt. Mid to late 60s, tough as nails in her own quiet way. 4 years ago, she lost her husband, Terry. Ever since, she's lived alone, just her. The little routines that keep a house steady and the hollow quiet that comes with grief. She carried it well, but anyone who's known that kind of loss recognizes the weight, even when it isn't spoken aloud. Recently, Ellie had her closest brush with death yet. An E. coli infection sent her to the hospital, and the doctors made a decision no family wants to hear. She'd be put into an induced coma. A week in suspended stillness, machines breathing for her, her body in limbo, the prognosis was bleak. Family held their breath, prayed, prepared for the worst, and then miraculously Ellie pulled through, fragile, yes, but alive. Not long after she returned home, we paid her a visit. I'll admit, part of me went with curiosity sharp in my chest. I've always leaned toward belief, especially when it comes to the paranormal. My partner, on the other hand, a skeptic, through and through. He rolls his eyes at ghost stories, mutters about drafts and imagination. But for me, when someone survives a coma, when they walk that thin edge between this life and whatever comes next, I can't help but wonder, did they see anything? Did they cross into the light even for a moment? So I asked her, sitting there in her lounge, a little weaker than usual, but still very much Ellie, I leaned in and asked if she remembered anything during her coma. A dream, a vision, some sense of leaving her body, anything at all. She shook her head, nothing. No tunnels of light, no voices calling her name. Just a blank stretch of darkness, and then the slow climb back into waking. That could have been the end of it. But Ellie had another story, not about her coma, about something stranger, something she swore she didn't believe in. Yet it had happened all the same. On the side table in her lounge sat a framed photograph of her sister, Lynn. Lynn had died just 2 years earlier, a sudden heart attack that blindsided everyone. No warning, no history of heart trouble, she was just gone. And Ellie, who had been not only her sister but her closest friend, was left untethered. She missed her in the way you miss part of yourself, the way you keep turning to share a thought with someone before remembering they're not there. One evening, Ellie sat watching the television, that quiet companion, in the room when no one else is around. And suddenly, without warning, Lynn's framed photo fell to the ground. The glass cracked. There was no breeze, no open window, nothing that could have knocked it loose. Just the stillness of a winter night, and then the sound of something hitting the floor. Her son Paul fixed the frame for her, restored the photo to its place. But a short while later, while Ellie and Paul both sat together, the same photo fell again. Another crash, another splintering sound in a room that should have been calm. They joked about it then, trying to make light of the unease. Maybe Lynn didn't like where her photo was placed. Maybe she was being nosy, angling for a better view. Jokes to cover the shiver under the skin. Eventually, they mounted the photo on the wall, and once it hung there, fixed and immovable, the disturbances stopped. But Ellie insisted that wasn't the story. That was just the backdrop, the prelude to something much stranger. It happened in the mornings, just after Lynn's death. Ellie, as always, had woken early. She dressed, made her bed, the small rituals that meant she was wide awake by the time she stepped into the hallway. That morning was no different. She opened her bedroom door, expecting only the familiar quiet of her home. And then she saw her, Lynn. Not in a dream, not in a haze of half-sleep, clear as day, stepping through the window in a flowing white dress, and she wasn't alone. A man stood beside her, silent, indistinct. But Lynn, Ellie's sister, gone to the grave, was right there. Ellie's heart slammed in her chest. She knew what she was seeing couldn't be possible. And yet it was. Her throat caught, but the words came tumbling out all the same. Lynn, what are you doing here? And Lynn answered, calm, gentle, as if nothing at all were amiss. I just came to see if you were all right. That was all. No grand revelation, no secrets from beyond, just that simple assurance. Ellie wept, not in terror, but in grief, in shock, because she knew what it meant to look into the eyes of someone already buried. Her neighbor Helga came in shortly after, finding Ellie distraught. Ellie told her what had happened, every detail, and then, like that, the moment was gone. Ellie never said how they left, whether Lynn and the man simply turned and walked away, or whether they dissolved into the air. She didn't recall how long they lingered, only that she saw her sister again, and that it was real. She wasn't afraid, just undone. I told her she was lucky. Millions of people would give anything, anything, for just one last moment with a loved one who'd passed, one last look, one last word. Ellie had been given that, but the detail that hooked in my mind and wouldn't let go was the man. Who was he? He stood silently beside Lynn, present but not the focus, watching Ellie but saying nothing. Some stranger from beyond or someone she already knew? On the drive home, I told my partner I believed it was Terry, Ellie's husband, gone 4 years now. It made sense to me. Maybe he was there to help Lynn through, to give her the strength to appear. They'd both loved Ellie. Maybe whatever disagreements they'd had in life, those fell away in death. Maybe he came not to speak, but simply to be the anchor that allowed Lynn to step through one last time. My partner scoffed at that. He reminded me that Terry and Lynn hadn't gotten along. The idea of them appearing together was unthinkable to him. But I disagree. Death changes things. The walls we build between each other in life, the grudges, the pettiness, they don't matter anymore. What remains is love. And between Ellie, Terry, and Lynn, that love was undeniable. Which leaves the question, was this a gift? A visitation meant to soothe Ellie's grief? Or was it something else? Because when the dead come back, it's rarely for no reason at all. It's tempting with stories like these to draw neat lines to say, yes, it was her sister. Yes, it was her husband. They came to say goodbye. End of story. But hauntings, visions, visitations, they never tie themselves up so neatly. They leak. They linger. They leave questions echoing in the room long after the moment itself has passed. Ellie insisted she didn't believe in such things. That line stuck with me. I don't believe in this stuff. She said it with the stubbornness of someone who lives by habit. Someone who doesn't have time for nonsense. But disbelief doesn't protect you. It doesn't keep the strange away. If anything, it makes the encounter sharper. Because you can't shrug it off. You can't say, well, maybe my mind was playing tricks. Not when it's as real as the floor beneath your feet. And I keep circling back to the morning itself. Mornings carry a strange power in ghost stories. We tend to think of hauntings as a midnight thing, the witching hour, 3 a.m., shadows stretching across candlelight. But so often, the most unsettling encounters happen in daylight, in the hour when you least expect them. That's what makes them stick. You can rationalize a creak in the dark. You can tell yourself you were half asleep. But when the sun's up, when you're dressed, bed made, kettle whistling, and your dead sister steps through the window, there's no easy way to file that away. It wasn't even the first time Ellie had felt Lynn's presence. That photo frame crashing to the floor, it's the kind of thing skeptics scoff at. But anyone who's lost someone knows better. The dead cling to objects, to photos, jewelry, books, the things that held them in life. A photograph isn't just paper and ink, it's a doorway. Maybe Lynn reached out through that photo before she could manage anything else. A knock on the glass, a reminder, I'm still here. And what of the man? Silent, standing beside her? Some believe the dead don't travel alone, that when they cross back, they come in twos or threes. Not because they mean harm, but because the crossing is difficult. It takes strength. And sometimes it takes help. If Lynn was struggling to appear, maybe the man was her guide, a spirit usher, or maybe he was someone closer, someone Ellie simply didn't recognize because grief blurred the details. The skeptics will say it was grief, plain and simple. The mind, desperate to see the face it lost, conjuring it from memory. Hallucination, fueled by sorrow, and that's a tidy explanation. But Ellie wasn't drifting in half sleep. She was wide awake, steady in her morning routine, and she spoke to Lynn. That's the detail that unsettles me, because hallucinations don't usually talk back. And then there's the dress, white, flowing, not the clothes Lynn wore in life. No, this was something symbolic, archetypal. For centuries across cultures, the dead are imagined returning in white, burial shrouds, wedding gowns, robes of purity. Maybe it's a universal shorthand, the way the other side makes itself known to us, a language older than words. I picture Ellie standing there holding her breath, staring at her sister in the hallway light, the air still heavy with mourning, quiet as only an empty house can be. And in that silence, Lynn's voice. I just came to see if you were all right. The words were devastating in their simplicity. No revelations, no prophecy. Just a sister checking in. And isn't that exactly what Lynn would have done in life? The familiar carried across the impossible. But Ellie never said how Lynn left. Did she vanish like mist? Did she turn? Walk back through the window, taking the man with her? Or did she simply blink out mid-moment like a dream cut short? Ellie doesn't remember. And maybe that's the cruelest part. Because it means there's no closure, just an abrupt end. One moment your sister is there, the next she's gone again. And you're left standing in the hallway wondering if you've gone mad. Except Ellie didn't imagine it. She couldn't have. Not with the way she wept. Not with the way Helga, her neighbor, found her shaken and red-eyed, struggling to explain the unexplainable. That's what convinces me. The rawness, the vulnerability. Ellie isn't the type to embellish. She's the type to sweep the floor, fold the laundry, put the kettle on. If she says it happened, I believe her. But that still leaves the man, silent, watching. Was he Terry? Was he a guide? Or was he something else entirely? Because here's the darker thought. What if he wasn't there for Ellie at all? What if he was there for Lynn? Folklore has names for him. The Greeks called them psychopomps, spirits who lead the newly dead into the afterlife, sometimes kind, sometimes stern, sometimes faceless. The Irish spoke of fetches, figures that appeared just before or after death, doubles or escorts of the departed. Victorians called them watchers, and across cultures in deathbed accounts and near-death visions, the same figure appears, the silent shadow. The man in the corner, the presence that doesn't interact, only observes. That's the part of Ellie's story that won't leave me alone. Not that her sister returned, but that she wasn't alone when she did. Still, maybe it was Terry. Maybe in death, grudges fall away and love rises to the surface. Maybe he walked with Lynn because he understood how much Ellie needed it. Maybe he gave her that moment as his final gift, even if she never recognized him. But I keep circling back to Ellie's reaction. She wasn't terrified. She wasn't frozen with dread. She was heartbroken. The kind of heartbreak that comes when something you've lost is suddenly given back just for a moment. And that, more than anything, convinces me this wasn't a trick of the mind. Because if grief hallucinations soothe, Ellie's experience shattered. And what does someone do with that? How do you fold it back into daily life when you've seen the impossible standing in your hallway? Ellie never chased it. She never lit candles or called out to Lynn, hoping she'd return. That's not her way. She got up the next morning, made her bed, put the kettle on, and carried on. but the memory stayed lodged inside her like a shard under the skin. And when she told us, she didn't tell it like a believer trying to convince. She told it like someone who had no choice but to speak it out loud. Because some stories refuse to stay buried. And maybe that's why her story unsettles me so deeply. Because it's not the kind of thing you can dismiss with a wave of the hand. It wasn't a dream. It wasn't a trick of light. It wasn't wishful thinking. It was her sister, dead, buried, and a man, silent and watching. The question isn't, did it happen? The question is, why? Because here's the truth we don't want to face. If the boundary between life and death can be crossed, even for a moment, then who exactly gets to cross? We want to imagine only the ones we love, a grandmother, a child, a husband, a sister. We want to believe they come back just to comfort us, to reassure us, to let us know we're not alone. And sometimes I believe that's true. Lynn's words, I just came to see if you were all right, were nothing but love. Pure, simple, ordinary love, carried across the impossible. But the man, always the man. Silent, indistinguishable, present but not explained. That detail turns the whole story. Because what if he wasn't Terry? What if he wasn't a guide? What if he wasn't there for Lynn at all? But for Ellie? Think about the timing. She had just lost her sister. Her body, though she didn't know it yet, was already failing, an infection spreading that would soon put her in a coma. Vulnerability hangs in the air like a scent, and spirits, whatever they are drawn to it. Maybe he wasn't an escort. Maybe he was an opportunist. And if Helga hadn't come in that morning, if she hadn't walked through the door and found Ellie in tears, would things have unfolded differently? That's speculation, yes. But stories like this force speculation because they refuse to be contained by reason alone. Still, part of me clings to the softer version. That it really was Terry standing by Lynn's side. That in death, whatever pettiness had once divided them dissolved. That love was the only thing left and love was enough to carry Lynn across. That he stayed silent. Not because he was a stranger, but because the moment wasn't his. Because this was Lynn's visit and his only role was to stand guard. It's almost comforting, almost. But even that version carries its own unease. Because once you've seen them, once you've spoken to them, you can never again pretend the veil is solid. You know it isn't. You know it can tear. And if it can tear for love, it can tear for other reasons too. That's what keeps me awake at night. The thought that maybe the dead don't choose when they return. Maybe sometimes they're pulled. Maybe sometimes they're accompanied. And maybe not every companion means you well. Ellie, of course, doesn't dwell on it. That's not her way. She still gets up every morning, makes her bed, puts the kettle on. She says she doesn't believe. But I don't buy that anymore. Because once you've looked into the eyes of someone who shouldn't be standing in your hallway, disbelief becomes a luxury you no longer have. She carries the memory quietly, and I carry it with me too. The image of a white dress, a silent man, and a sister who crossed back just long enough to say, I came to see if you were all right, but here's the thing. Once the dead know they can step through, once they've found the crack in the wall between here and there, who's to say they don't come back again? Who's to say they aren't already waiting? So the next time you step into your hallway in the quiet of morning, pause for just a moment. Look toward the window and ask yourself, if someone were standing there watching, would you be comforted or would you be afraid? Because silence is never truly silent and shadows are never truly empty. And sometimes someone is already there.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.